We have been taught for I don't know how many years, no, you need as many buyers through the door as you can. You need 3 to 4 weeks to get as much activity as possible, and you need to maximize that exposure. Whereas now it's like, obviously something's resonating with the sellers because they're thinking that all of a sudden 3 or 4 buyers through is a better option.
You're listening to Elevate, the official podcast of Elite Agent for real estate industry sales professionals, property managers and leaders. With thanks to our partner Connect Now, Elevate brings you the best tools, thinking and strategies to elevate your results. To download your written action guide from this podcast containing extra tips, links and shortcuts, visit EliteAgentElevate.com. And for more information about how Connect Now can make moving easier on your clients, visit connectnow.com.au. Here is your host, Samantha McLean.
Welcome to another episode of the Elevate Podcast, where we delve into some of the most interesting minds in business and in real estate for the very best tips and strategies for you to implement to elevate your business. I'm Samantha McLean, editor of Elite Agent and host of this week's show. Joining me today is the newly appointed managing director at RE/MAX Australia. Welcome to the show, Joel Davron.
Thank you very much, Sam. It's a privilege, I must say.
So do they call you MD now, knowing that the old MD was MD?
No, they don't. I've always kind of been JD. I'm MD 2.0. it's probably worse things that they've called me, but certainly right now, most people just call me Joel.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we'll stick with Joel for today. How about that?
That sounds good. I'm happy with that.
Awesome. So firstly, congratulations from all of us on your new role. Did you know it was coming?
Firstly, I knew that something was in the air, definitely. With everything going on at the time, everyone was on high alert and there was a lot going on and there was certainly something happening. In terms of our plans, we'd already had succession plan conversations for a number of years and we knew that there was a number of things that we wanted to do in the future based on, you know, MD's ideas around when he wanted to step back. But the announcement when he did let me know, and then when we did eventually let the network know, it was probably sooner than we originally planned, which was for next year sometime. But I think COVID gave him, oddly enough, a lot of confidence in that his succession plan was strong.
Well, it's interesting times to be stepping up into that big, big leadership role, into the highest office. And being an election year in the US, it sort of reminds me again of how when presidents are elected, their first speech is usually what they're going to do in the first 100 days of office. Have you had a think about your first 100 days in office?
Yeah, I have. One of the first things I did after MD had the conversation with me around taking the role on was, you know, I need to really figure out what should I be doing just to get organized and ready for this, because we had a bit of lead in time for it. So I really did think about it and I wanted to think about the priorities that I had for, you know, not just for the team in here and the network, but certainly for the new dynamics of the leadership team, because, you know, that's just as important, setting the foundations for the new leadership team as well. Probably a couple of priorities that I had was, one, bedding down those dynamics of the new leadership team, making sure that we're all across our responsibilities and what we needed to do. Two, I wanted to make the role change as little of a distraction as possible, because at the end of the day, we're still going through a very sensitive and for many a stressful period of time. So their needs don't change just because my role changed or MD's role changed or Josh's role has changed. So, or Chris's, you know, that doesn't change. The service of our clients had to be paramount throughout that. And also probably the final point was to start a process of reviewing our strategic plans for the company.
Yeah. It's interesting times we find ourselves in, a bit like last year was the year of two halves. And mm-hmm. I've been asking everyone on the podcast, how has COVID affected the business? So what have you seen, particularly within the RE/MAX network? What has stayed the same and what has changed?
I think there's a lot that's changed and old habits are trying to creep back in and we're trying to stop that from happening. Some of the big things that I noticed is that from a presence perspective, our team in here were probably more present with our network than we ever have been just through the technology. And that from a RE/MAX perspective, in terms of our perspective, I don't think we've ever felt as connected with our network as we do right now. which is a little bit odd to say considering we're in semi-lockdown in some cases, you know, working from home and not able to see many people. And to feel that connectedness with the network was a little bit of a surprise, but certainly a pleasant surprise. The adaptive nature of humans and the resilience of our industry were some of the things that I really picked up on. One of the things I have to commend many of the other franchise leaders about is the cooperation between us all and sharing resources. You know, I saw some terrific examples of leadership from some of the REI leaders, from the REIP as well, and from individuals within the network. Technology is obviously the go-to topic when it comes to COVID and how it's affected things. You know, I saw a few different articles and things like that about different groups testing work from home arrangements and things like that. But to be perfectly honest, we made a number of changes a number of years ago. We knew we could work from home. We knew that wasn't going to be a problem. It wasn't about that. It was about tweaking that. How do we make that effective? And then how can we allow our clients, salespeople, property managers, business owners, and administrators, how can we give them the tools they need, the technological tools they need to continue doing what they need to do? And so I think what we'll see is certainly some changes in the client servicing space around potentially more virtual meetings and virtual inspections. I know that they're still happening. Every time I turn around and talk to a salesperson, they sold another property without the person going through it. That's made those transactions significantly more acceptable than they were in the past.
Mm. It's interesting how probably, you know, 12 months ago we were thinking there had to be physical inspection and, you know, property managers couldn't do virtual inspection and things like that. There's a lot of stuff that COVID has now taught us that we once thought was not possible.
Yeah. Also, one of the other things that I've noticed, and this is flowing through post restrictions easing here in Queensland anyways, and in some cases, some of the other states, but I'm seeing convenience for the seller is at the moment, in some cases, trumping service. You know, an agent going, hey, I've got three or four buyers that I can take through your property right now to get it sold for you. We have been taught for I don't know how many years, no, you need as many buyers through the door as you can. You need 3 to 4 weeks to get as much activity as possible, and you need to maximize that exposure. Whereas now it's like, obviously something's resonating with the sellers because they're thinking that all of a sudden 3 or 4 buyers through is a better option. Not in every case, but certainly it's something I'm noticing more of anyways.
You did just mention a little while ago that some people are just waiting for things to go back to normal. And I feel that too, but I also feel like you shouldn't waste a good crisis. Some of the things that come out of COVID have actually been good. What are the good things that you've observed?
As mentioned, I think the resilience and the adaptability of our industry, we were so lucky to be able to keep trading. There were some industries that weren't. We have that luxury available to us. So yeah, sure, volumes were way down. There's no denying that, but we could still list property. We could still sell property. We could still conduct inspections, albeit virtually in some occasions. And, you know, we could still promote ourselves through the social media channels with live videos or stories or however we choose to do it. You know, I really do think the cooperation and across a number of the industry leaders was commendable. In terms of some of the other benefits from COVID, I'd like to think that the lessons learnt around communication and adding value with your communication to some of our, you know, for want of a better word, future customers or contacts or prospects, there was some really good stuff that I noticed coming through there about real estate agents standing up in their communities and offering some advice around usually what people deem to be their largest investment being their property.
It's up to agents moving forward to maintain that leadership position because, mm-hmm. you know, particularly with a few of the new regional newspapers now not publishing anymore, the time is now for agents to be a go-to news source.
That's a bigger thing than I think some people have given acknowledgement to. Those local papers, for us, we're talking about how can somebody speak to their community, particularly in regional areas, and that was one of their best channels.
Yeah.
So they're going to have to think of creative and new ways to be able to deliver that assistance to the community.
Yeah, absolutely. Start hanging out at the local council and work out what's going on in the DA. That's what I reckon. That's the best marketing.
Maybe.
Best marketing I can think of right now, because that's what those papers were good for, is letters to the editor about development in the local area.
Oh, there was a lot of that for sure.
Yeah.
You know, there was. There was also some of our offices in particular had really strong presence in those local papers.
Yeah.
And so that all of a sudden gone very quickly. Okay, you need to rethink what you're going to dominate now in terms of that marketing space.
Yeah, fantastic opportunity though, I think.
I agree.
So we're here to talk the leadership diaries today, because we always like to do this with people that have, you've been in a leadership role in RE/MAX for years now, and you've also been in real estate for years now, but for people that perhaps don't know you as well as MD, who's been such a familiar face on the real estate landscape. So are you ready?
Mm-hmm.
Going to start with you getting into real estate. So you didn't actually start with RE/MAX. You started with LJ Hooker quite some years ago.
Correct.
So did you choose real estate, or did real estate choose you?
I chose real estate initially, and then realized that I was 23. I probably lacked the maturity to execute it well, but I stuck with it. And then the first year I was like, this is really hard. I don't know if I'm going to do this. And then the next year, it was like, this is really hard and it's repetitive and I'm getting some traction, but it's difficult, but it's exciting. And then it moved into, I'm actually not bad at this. I'm actually getting used to this. I'm seeing some success. I'm having some wins. So in some ways, I think it was a bit of a slow dance for me. And I think in the end, I think the industry chose me, maybe. I don't know.
Do you remember your first sale?
I do. Yes, I do. It was... There was two almost on the same day, and one was a friend of the family that gave me a shot, and the other one was a guy who was renovating his house who I door knocked in the middle of summer in 35 degree heat, and I think he felt sorry for me, and he was renovating his house, so he gave me a glass of water and asked me in to have a look at his property. So funnily enough, I ran into him probably about a year ago, and he works in the building next to me. I sold two properties for him in the end.
Small world.
It is.
What does the first hour of your day look like? Are you a 5 a.m. clubber?
I'm a 4:45 a.m. clubber. Oh, right. Yeah. Look, whether that's through the efforts of my kids or whether that's through my own alarm, sometimes it's different. But I never used to be an early riser when I first started in the industry, but now I get up pretty early. And I do that because I like to feel like I've had a head start. That's probably the most part. And I like to train. The only time I can train is when my girls are asleep. So that's the best bet for me.
Nice and quiet. Actually, that's another thing COVID has been good for, is like everyone's learned to work out at home now with videos and stuff like that.
I've been doing stuff like that for a long time. So, you know, I was able to just – I had everything set up ready to go. So that was no different. I tell you, talking about quiet, one of the weirdest things about COVID was – every now and then I'd take my girls for a walk, and we were walking one morning towards one of the busier roads in Brisbane just to go and get a coffee. No cars, no traffic. It was completely silent. It was very unnerving, actually. Mm. After a couple of minutes, I got used to it. It was quite nice.
Yeah, absolutely. It's Sydney's back to being chaos again.
Yeah, Brisbane too.
Yeah. What about the rest of your day? Do you have a routine or something like that that keeps you productive?
The calls that I need to make, the most important calls, I will always aim to get done. Very much Brian Tracy
eat that
fans,
frog.
Eat that frog. I recommend that to a lot of people. And it's done benefit better for me because I'm a morning person. My energy levels are at their height. I usually throw my meetings in between kind of 10 and 1. And then I'll try and get, just the internal work done in the afternoon, just because I know that I usually catch a bit of time. We're still doing very, very regular network meetings online at the moment. And so that will usually be a late morning thing as well. So I've got a pretty structured week. I wouldn't say it's locked in each week, but it's pretty structured.
Yeah. You need that kind of thing, don't you? So otherwise you find yourself all over the place.
Yeah, I think if you ask some of the team in here what my week looks like, they might have a different answer to me, but it makes sense to me. And I like most humans, I'm a creature of habit. I like routine. That consistency helps me kind of stay anchored And that's something that's important. That routine, I think, helps me just get the hard things done that need to get done because I know it's just part of the process.
Yeah. Can you name someone that has had a really big impact on you as a leader?
Well, it'd be remiss of me not to say MD. You know, I think he has most definitely been probably the most influential leader in my life. Beyond that, there have been a number of other people that, you know, I've really learned a lot from in varying stages of my life. You know, I've got to say we've had a number of chairmen in our business in here who are very different to me. And so, you know, I really like to pick their brains around how they view things and how they observe things. And I would say that they've also, Phil and Adrian have been very much big influences in teaching me how to become a good leader.
Where do great ideas in the business come from?
From me, Sam, you know? I would say great ideas in our business. Sometimes you fall over them and sometimes you got to actively go out there and seek them. But one of the things I think we're generating our ideas from is human relationships with smart people. You know, there's some great companies out there that work in the real estate business that aren't necessarily in real estate that are running tremendous technology businesses and, you know, affiliated businesses to real estate. You don't have to look too far to find smart people that you can learn from. And as long as you're constantly curious and inquisitive, which we are, then that will eventually filter through, that culture filters through into your team. And every now and then our team just brings something to us that we just go, okay, that could work. Let's map it out, see what it looks like. And sometimes it becomes part of our business and sometimes it doesn't. But, you know, I think our team in here, they're maturing as a franchise team as well. And, you know, we've had a good core group of people in here for a number of years now. And that's actually made, I think, my transition a lot easier as well. I mean, we're 2 and a bit weeks in, so we're not that far in. We'll see how we go. But so far, things are going okay.
It feels like it's been ages. I don't know whether that's the, you know, how busy we've all been, but it does feel like that story came out ages ago.
Yeah. Yeah, you made the announcement, I think, on the 1st of June and then, you know, that 4 weeks leading into it, it's pretty crazy. It has been a crazy 6 weeks. Yeah. But the last 6 weeks have been crazy.
Yeah, for sure. What's your favourite question to ask someone in a job interview and what does it tell you about them?
What's the hardest thing you've ever had to deal with in your life? Whether it's in business, career or whatever it happens to be, you know, you usually find out a lot. I know a lot of people that have asked that question and they'll have that same response to you, Sam, but one of the big parts of a person's character I look for is resilience. And it is an underestimated quality in many cases. I think resilience is almost like you're the victim and you've got to deal with it, but it's really not. Resilience is I'm able to handle a lot of stuff. And sometimes it affects me, but you know, I'm able to deal with it and process it and move forward. And I've found that a lot of successful people tend to have that trait. And oftentimes I think my career has been built on the back of just not giving up.
Yeah, you described that when you were talking about your first couple of years in real estate, like you really need that. I think that describes everyone's first 3 years in real estate, really, doesn't it?
Yeah. There's a rare few that sell heaps in their first year and you look at them and enviously, but but certainly I think you've got to go through some hard times to appreciate the good times. And I speak to successful agents all the time that are riding a million plus and some of them are just horrendously under pressure. Mm. And you look at that and go, okay, well, you're earning over $1 million a year in terms of commission and you should be really happy, but, you know, that's not necessarily how life works or business works.
Yeah, I agree. I agree completely. How would you describe the culture of RE/MAX and what's the best way to help somebody new to the business understand that culture?
Before I came to RE/MAX, I was under the impression that RE/MAX was a very much a competitive dog-eat-dog kind of group, and that was reinforced on many occasions by many people that, you know, I was involved with in real estate in the early years and also by MD when he worked at another franchise group as well. And ironically, you know, some of the stuff that he was saying I still have to combat today. I think probably one of the best things that we have in this group is that it is, in my experience, the community element of it in terms of this tribal kind of sharing of resources and ideas and concepts is very, very strong in this group. For whatever reason, that was here before MD and I came here, or Josh or Chris, obviously. And that is something we're actively trying to preserve and build on. So it's a big part of our culture. I don't like talking about the word family when it comes to business, ironically, but in MD's own words, in family, sometimes there are some members of the family that don't contribute as much as the others. So when I talk about business and our involvement with it, I just talk more about community.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think that's what everyone's looking for at the moment, isn't it? Like a sense of belonging somewhere, particularly, you know, I think as humans, we need that even more right now.
Yeah, you couldn't pick who was going to be affected by it like that either. Mm. You know, there were some people who you thought that person's a really strong person, and then they got really knocked about. Yeah, it was really interesting. And then other people who you thought, oh, they might struggle a little bit, you know, they kind of lifted. And it was really hard to pick that. And like many things in COVID, there was no consistency to it. So it was a really interesting observation that many of us made at that time.
Mm. And I think that we'll continue too, you know, like the way we all react to different situations moving forward. Like, I think none of us have ever faced anything like this anyway before. Mm. So how will we feel about moving? How will we feel about a new job? How will we feel about traveling, going to the cinema? How do you feel when someone coughs beside you? Like, you know, it's just all of these unpredictable things that we've got to look forward to.
Yeah, there's a lot of changes, right? And the handshake one and the hug one, that's the one that gets me all the time. You know, whenever I see somebody from our network, that's usually my first response to seeing them.
Yeah.
And can't do it. You know, some of them do. Some of them try, and it's like, you know, and you kind of feel a bit awkward, but, you know, it's one of those things. You just got to deal with it and move on and just be respectful of other people's space.
Yeah, well, that's it. I was never a hugger, so I was okay with that. It was the handshaking that really got me.
Yeah, every now and then you'd catch yourself shaking someone's hand. Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't even think twice about it. And they do the same to you. But, yeah, it's a weird one, that one.
Yeah, absolutely. What advice would you give someone going into a leadership position for the first time?
Well, there's a few things that I learnt first time around, and it was, I think in many cases you can try and take on too much as a new leader and feel like you have this obligation to take on lots of stuff. And I think if I had to give someone advice on it, I would say, yes, there's going to be times where you do need to take on a lot, and the responsibility of being a leader in whatever capacity is a tremendous responsibility. But I would say that if you're new to a leadership role and you're not used to it, then I think you need to let it kind of sink in a little bit before you try and take on too much. I'll give you an example of that. This time round, when I spoke to you about one of our priorities being the strategic planning, I thought, okay, well, we might as well get started on that. And then I just realized there's so much more to settling this in than I realized. And really quickly, rather than trying to push ahead with the planning stuff, I just said, look, let's just step it back a little bit. Let's just settle things in. Let's get everyone comfortable, business as usual, and then we'll get to the strategic planning in the next month or two. Sometimes less is more when you're stepping into that leadership role, and keep your eyes and your ears open and, you know, actively listen to what people are saying.
Yeah, again, particularly now, that's so important, just to, you know, have people feel heard and, you know, to feel like even though there's a change in leadership that you're still there for them.
Mm-hmm. I've been really surprised by one of the things that we do in our business is that we have a very strong accessibility principle in our business. So many of our network can contact me at any time. And we had somebody in here who's looking at taking on an office, and they said, oh, look, obviously I'm not going to be calling you. Who do I speak to if I have a problem? I said, you can call me. That's fine. You know, if it's a problem, give me a call. You know, if it's a real problem, you can give me a call anytime. So that's a double-edged sword. You know, you get calls Saturday, Sunday nights and late at night, and sometimes you're on the phone for a lot longer than you need to be, but it's also a big part of our philosophy in RE/MAX. So in RE/MAX Australia anyways, and probably RE/MAX in most regions, but that accessibility is really important.
Yeah. Okay, a bit more of a fun question here. What's the worst advice you've ever heard given to someone starting their career in real estate?
Ah, okay. I've got a lot of beliefs around this. I personally think that you have to do the hard yakka at the start. You have to. And I've heard a lot of advice around people saying you need to spend a lot of big money on marketing to launch yourself as a real estate agent. My take on that advice is take it at your own peril. You know, I think I've seen it time and time again that marketing is absolutely critical. Good marketing, strong marketing, but you have to do the fundamentals to begin with. You cannot market your way into market share in real estate.
Mm.
Not at the start. Definitely not at the start.
Someone should tweet that.
I'm fairly sure I stole it from somebody, but I don't know. But that's it's definitely a belief that I have as well. And if I did take it from someone, I can't remember who it was, but you have to do the fundamentals and the basics. And you've got to choose those things that you like. We had an amazing agent, Laura Wright, today talking about marketing to our team and in our fortnightly sales meeting with the network. And she was the same. She's got a marketing slant to her business, but she realized she had to do the basics. And that's why she's tracking very well in terms of her growth.
Yeah. I like that. I've got to remember that you can't market your way to market share.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely not in the early days. Definitely not in the early days.
Yeah. That's right.
I'm sure that will be a good soundbite for someone to have a shot at me.
I expect that one at the top of the blog post. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, good.
What do you think is the number one skill that agents and property managers need to cultivate right now?
Connecting with their clients. And I know that's a really broad, general thing to say, but at a human level, that was one of the other things that came out through COVID, that level of vulnerability that you got to show as a leader and as a real estate professional to some people showed that you're a human. You're not just a real estate agent in a BMW with a mobile phone getting profile shots. There was a lot of real genuine connection and care towards clients. And I think that's one of the good things that I hope stays in the industry after COVID. And right now, like always, you shouldn't be prospecting for business. You should be, you know, nurturing relationships and trying to start new relationships and working on those as best you can, because that's what people are looking for. That to me was something I think, you know, we need to really focus on moving forward as well.
Yeah, absolutely. That's good advice. Well, Joel, I have enjoyed catching up with you like this again.
It's been fun.
It has been really great to do this finally, like, because we've been threatening to get you on the podcast for so long. If there was one thing that you would like to leave our audience with, what would it be?
There'll be a lot of different people in your audience, property managers, salespeople, business owners. I think this year has seen us operating at a very high level of alertness, as I mentioned earlier, and oftentimes without really knowing it. And we're already operating in a fast-paced business. And so you could have been on tilt for the last 3 or 4 months and you don't even know it. And so if you're feeling flat, if you're feeling, you know, really kind of disillusioned with it all, because I have spoken to some people that are, you know, the mental health issues that are arising from this is pretty serious. And so I guess my advice would be give yourself a bit of a break. Take it easy on yourself. Don't be too hard on yourself. If you are feeling the pressure, sure, you know, we have to get business done, but sometimes you need to cut yourself a little bit of slack as well. If you've been going hard out for the last 5 months, just doubling down, like a lot of people said you had to do, which is fair enough. I get that. If you've been doubling down for that period of time, it's going to take its toll. And so, you know, look after yourself and, you know, maybe you need a bit of a break away for a few days to disconnect and then come back with some fresh eyes and some fresh energy. Because I really think if you're in that space, you're probably only operating at 80% anyways.
Yeah.
Maybe less, you know. So have a break, come back at 100. It doesn't need to be a long break. It just needs to be something to help you refresh yourself a little bit so you can get into it and look after your clients.
Yeah. It's interesting that one of the most productive things that you can do for yourself sometimes is have a bit of downtime.
I am on the other side of that spectrum at the moment. I need a bit of a break, but I've got some time coming off, probably a week off in the next couple of months. So I will be enjoying that. I've personally experienced stepping out of my real estate business for 3 weeks once, and I came back a different agent.
Yeah.
I had better focus, better enthusiasm, and that worked wonders for me. So, yeah, just take care of yourself. That's all.
Yeah, absolutely. Good advice, Joel Davern. Thank you so much.
No problems. Hopefully you guys are staying safe down there in Sydney and look forward to catching up face-to-face sometime soon.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Elevate with thanks to connectnow.com.au. Don't forget to download your written action guide from this podcast containing extra tips, links and shortcuts. Visit eliteagentelevate.com.